Welcome to The Other Discovery Show, the podcast that's not about podcasts. It's about everything else that we discovered this week. And guys, we're back.
We are finally back.
I'm Kirk.
I'm Zach.
And we have a very special guest for you guys this week. Our a correspondent,
Yeah, he's a correspondent.
Yeah,
he's
our best correspondent.
A network friend. We've been on his show, and now he's on our show.
Keith.
From the Pop-Up Filmcast.
Hello, gentlemen.
Thank you for being here, friend.
Absolutely.
Not a problem. As a correspondent to the show, this is great. As a network exec, this is also great.
Yeah, you're the head of our network. You're like co-heading.
It's not necessarily a two-man job, but it takes a village, PopFix Network is good stuff, man.
Yeah, he's assistant to the regional manager of the PopFix Network.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is exactly it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's great to have you on here, and let's just dive right in because it's been a while since I discovered some things, so. Let's discover. I discovered why Dalmatians are fire dogs. I had always seen it. I think basically everybody, if you were like,
we grew up with it.
Fire dog.
Cartoons. Like, oh, you know, okay. Any book that you read when you were a kid that was a picture book?
Always a Dalmatian.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And apparently this goes back to the 1800s when fire engines were carriages, horse-drawn. And the main reason that they did this is because... Dalmatians are, one, great watchdogs, but two, really good, like, companion animals for horses. So horses, apparently, if left alone, get all antsy and nervous and everything. And Dalmatians, specifically Dalmatians, were able to better, like, bond with the horses and make them be calm and everything like that. And so, apparently, it was... somewhat common to try and stick up fire carriages at the time.
Like, rob them?
Yeah, I don't know what they would steal. The water, I don't know. People's guns, their clothes, who knows. But, so, they would stop a lot of things. They would make the horses more calm. They would stop robberies. And so, they would just run with the carriage on the way to the fire. But it wasn't like they weren't doing anything specific besides just being with the horses. And... that apparently also went like to other things. It wasn't just fire engines or anything like that. They would use them on farmlands and stuff like that too. And stagecoach drivers would do the exact same thing. They would have them be guard dogs for running stagecoaches. So who knew that that's why they became synonymous with fire stations?
Because not me.
It's something that's completely different than it
but
is
But now
right
I
now.
Do.
I do believe my grandma had, I'm guessing it wasn't a purebred Dalmatian because that thing was a portly little thing and it would not be able to chase after any horse-drawn carriage or truck at all.
Lay down on the side of the road.
Pretty much. Yeah. And just wait for you to give it like a treat again or something like that. But I did not know that a very specific type of dog could be used to calm down a horse that I'm just curious. Did they give any more reasons behind that? Like, I don't want to say because of the spots and stuff like that, but does that somehow
I think it was
play into? Because
with the breed, apparently they're pretty good. They're pretty good companion animals because they mentioned that they'll sometimes they can bond with like chickens and goats and other dogs better than everything else too. So I think they're
this
just,
is where cat dog comes from.
I don't.
It's,
think
right?
So.
Right?
Yes. Cat dog is definitely a Dalmatian.
It's been a long time since I watched that cartoon.
I don't miss it. But
this explains how in 101 Dalmatians, like they're able to like they network like across a whole bunch of like farms and everything like that because they were able
everything
to
makes
like
sense now.
Talk to everybody.
Yeah. it's tying together a lot of things I didn't know were missing. And so it was just, but I just never thought there was any reason to it besides, like, I honestly had never thought about it. It's just like, okay, fire station, Dalmatian. It's like, I just believe that because you told me it. I had no context for why.
Now, for some reason, Dalmatians seem to be like a kind of breed that I hardly ever see anybody have. I wonder why. I have heard that they're actually very aggressive.
No, and that's part of why they had them here.
Really?
Because they're like,
oh yeah, because they're
protective.
Protecting. Okay. I think that they buried the lead there, that people were robbing fire trucks. That's what? Why?
I'm still
very confused as to why people would want to rob a fire truck.
I mean, I don't know. I guess, okay, so most of the time they would rob it for the horses.
They just steal your horses?
Mm. Yeah, like literally it was just that time, and they're like, there's horses there, we're going to take them.
That's like stealing somebody's car. It's like Grand Theft Auto, but it's a horse.
Yeah, but it's a horsey, and you can't use a
Grand Theft horsey.
Your car, I don't think. I guess you could. You wouldn't want it to run next to you, though, probably. But no, I guess it was
maybe the horses weren't calm. They were just in line because they were scared of the Dalmatians.
Yeah. The Dalmatians are just that terrifying that the horses just would never want to run away.
Wow. And it's interesting how, like, even like at that time, then, like, this would suddenly become an early viral thing where every firehouse you always imagine with a Dalmatian. So it's not just like, oh, this one little area had a well-trained Dalmatian that could do things. No, it firehouse A, and then firehouse B got one, and firehouse F suddenly has one, and it's spread throughout the entire country to where this is what we picture Dalmatians. It's not like,
yeah, even today, it started in the 1800s. Yeah. Pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. I also read that they were kind of like, they barked a lot, so that, like, they were trained to bark a lot when they were running with the fire, and so it was basically with the fire carriage or whatever. So they were basically like the siren as well.
Sounds like it'd be chaos to see a fire happening in the 1800s. There's dogs running around and horses. Barking. People are trying to steal horses off the carriage. Like, there's a fire over there, man. Just stop.
Yeah,
that's nuts. Have you guys ever heard of the Barkley Marathons?
No.
I don't think so.
Is it a dog marathon?
No. It is it's an ultra marathon trail race. And I just watched on Amazon, they actually have a documentary on the 2012 running of the Barkley Marathons. It's held at Frozen Head State Park in Tennessee. The course is designed by this guy. You get to meet him. His name is Gary Lazarus Lake Cantrell. And he was he's a runner and a trail runner.
The guy has a lot of names.
Back in like the late 70s. And so he was in Tennessee and he heard about, James Earl Ray, the guy who had, assassination of Martin Luther King. He had escaped from this Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, and it was a huge manhunt and stuff, but he only covered about 8 miles after 55 hours of running in the woods because he just was getting lost everywhere. Cantrell made the claim that he could have gotten through at least 100 miles during that time. And so in 1986, he started the very first Barkley Marathons, and it wasn't until it wasn't until 1995 that somebody actually completed it. Wow. So they get people from all over to apply. Only 40 people per year get to run this thing. And it is basically 5 20-mile laps, in 60 hours.
Good.
What? And so the craziness, so you will, it rain, it's rain, shine, sun up, sun down. The first time you go out through the course, you go clockwise, you finish it, you can rest a little bit, and then you take back off and you have to go counterclockwise. And then you do the same thing again. If you make it to the fifth lap, whoever goes out first picks whether they're going clockwise or counterclockwise. The next person has to go the opposite way. Now, obviously, you don't get that many people going through all of this. So they put this whole thing together. Like I said, his first run in 1986. People can apply. They have to fill out an essay that says why they should be allowed to run. They need to pay a $1.60 application fee and then complete any other requirements. The first time you run it, you have to give them a license plate from the state or country where you're from. And then any other time that you have to do it after that, you had to donate whatever he's asking for. For a while it was white shirts. For a while it was socks. Once everyone gets there, they will then tell you, okay, we are going to blow this conch shell sometime within the next 12 hours.
Sometime.
When you hear that, you have sometime in the next 12 hours between midnight and noon. When you hear that, you have an hour to get to the starting line. Get all your stuff ready to go and head out. So like one time they made everyone start in like the middle of the night. The next time, maybe it's like, you know, early in the morning, et cetera. It is a 20-mile unmarked loop. There are no aid stations except for a couple water drop points along the way. If you want to know whether somebody made it through or not, they have books anywhere from in the 2012 one. There's 11 books. Whatever number you're assigned, that's the page you have to rip out of the book. So when you come through, you have to hand him 11 pages to prove that you hit all the checkpoints.
Good.
It also goes up and down. There is 54,200 feet of accumulated vertical climb throughout the whole thing. Oh my goodness. And basically, it's about 100 miles.
And you said someone did this. Someone completed this.
So Mark Williams, there's been 15 runners, or no, 18 times by 15 runners as of 2019. They started the competition in 86. If you do three laps, it's called the fun run.
Oh, fun. So
for
fun.
A while,
doesn't sound fun to me.
For a while, they never told people that it was 100 miles until they first started getting people to complete the fun run, because it took a few years just for that. This guy, Mark Williams, he completed it in 59 hours and 29 minutes. You get 60 hours to complete it. In 2012, so the one that that they showed in the documentary, this guy finishes his second, and he does it in 52 hours and 3 minutes. And then there's another guy who's finished it three times in 2012, 2014, and 2016.
Wow.
And the documentary is probably longer than it has to be.
Kind of like the race.
But it's interesting because they do not advertise it. They do not. It's just people learn about it and they hear about it and then they start applying and you get a condolence letter if you're chosen.
Like you're
whoever they've picked.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. You got to run this. Whoever they think great. is going to like fall out first. Like if you don't complete any of it, they give him a bib number one automatically. They make a guess who they think is going to like quit first.
This is a ruthless contest.
Yeah.
Here.
It sounds crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, you could be 10 miles out into this thing and decide you're done. You have to walk back.
Ooh.
Oh, and then at one point they do get to that state penitentiary that the guy had escaped from before. And there's a tunnel that goes underneath the penitentiary. So when they get out there, they actually have to go through this like underground tunnel underneath the penitentiary as well to get through and stuff like that. And then, you know, make their way back down. It's nothing I'll ever do. It does not look fun at all.
No.
But I was kind of captivated by it.
No, that sounds crazy. And okay. To me, my favorite part of this is that it started because some guy saw the guy who killed MLK try to escape. And his first thought was, man, that idiot is slow. I could run so much farther than he could run through the woods. I'm going to make a contest. Like, we're talking about somebody that thinks differently here.
Oh, and they asked him if they're like, so how many times have you completed this? He goes, oh, I've never done it.
So he just
runs the thing.
He's like, that guy's just slow. I don't believe that that's as far as you can get.
I listened to a This American Life episode. I think it was like Man versus Horse or whatever. But there's a race in like Nevada or something, or Arizona or something, somewhere out there in the desert, where every single year, people try to outrun a horse. Distance, I mean, it's like very long distance. It's okay, long distance. And the episode that they recorded, the guy did it.
And it's called Man versus Horse.
That's the episode's name. Okay. Yeah.
But why would you?
Because, and it all started very similar. Some dude like in a bar was like, well, man can run longer than a horse can. The horse can run faster, but a man can run longer. And it was just like some stupid thing that happened in a bar. And now every freaking year they do a stinking like race because of that.
If you win the man versus horse race, do you get to slap the horse?
That's exactly what you get.
Is it like Blazing Saddles?
You get some free glue.
You get to knock the horse out.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to learn more about this, it is on it's on Amazon Prime. So,
no, I mean, that sounds crazy. It reminds me of that ridiculous haunted house where they nobody's done it, right? Nobody's completed it because he like waterboards you.
Yeah.
Or it's like,
Were you the one that told me about that, Keith? I could be wrong. I think that we talked about it a little bit, but.
I forget if I heard it from you guys or where I heard it from, but yeah, it did not sound like a good time.
It sounds horrible. We watched videos from that, and I felt weird watching the videos because it felt like you were watching people be tortured.
It's deeply unsettling.
It is very unsettling.
I would not even try that.
So today I learned that Charles Pretty Boy Floyd was a Great Depression era gangster, and he was a notorious bank robber, but just like Bonnie and Clyde were like very loved by regular people, which is really weird. Like if you think about and you read about and learn about Bonnie and Clyde, they were horrible people. Like they killed people for no reason and they were just really bad people, but they were loved by regular folks. And this dude, what he would do every time that he would rob a bank, he would destroy the mortgage papers at the bank so everybody that had their mortgage through that bank, because this was a long time ago, this was the 1800s basically, this was in the 1800s, it was 1904, my bad.
Pre-internet.
Yeah, but so basically that's all they had for record of the mortgage. Was the piece of paper. So all these people would not have a mortgage anymore.
I mean, I can see how that's a Robin Hood-like character.
Yeah.
He was committing crimes.
He was born in Georgia in February 1904. His family soon moved to Oklahoma, where they owned a farm and were extremely poor. He became known as Chalk, which is a really weird nickname, due to his appreciation of the Choctaw beer, and he turned to crime to escape poverty during the Depression. And so he robbed banks and stuff like that. And finally, when the FBI caught him, they had a $23,000 bounty on his head, which especially back in that time was a lot of money. That's a lot of money. But they said when he was found and when he was killed, a record number of gatherers came, well into the thousands, attended Floyd's funeral at Atkins Cemetery. The gunman's legend was put into song as part of Woody Guthrie's Pretty Boy Floyd in 1992, and a biography of his life was published, Pretty Boy, The Life and Times of Charles Arthur Floyd by Michael Wallace. It's one of those, like you said, like Robin Hood type guys where he was stealing from the banks, but he was destroying people's mortgages. So they're like, all right, sweet. Now I don't got to pay for my house.
I don't care.
Was he actually a pretty boy, though?
I mean, he got a baby face.
He doesn't look disturbing.
He looks like a...
I mean, that's because, you get... was it Ted Bundy? Who ladies just loved him and stuff. And I watched one of the documentaries on him. My wife walked in, she's like, what? That dude's horrible looking. Why would anybody go after that? go after him. Because ladies loved him all the time. So I was just curious, like, I guess if you call yourself Pretty Boy, well, you can't call yourself Pretty Boy, I guess. Somebody has to give you a nickname. I mean, that's the only right way to do it.
You're setting yourself up if you start calling yourself Pretty Boy.
Yeah, or it's, I guess maybe that would be, maybe was it a sarcastic nickname?
It could be, but it doesn't look that disturbing either. I feel like if you're going to like sarcastically call somebody Pretty Boy, then you look messed up.
And I mean, look, also, yeah, if someone wants to go through and tear up a bunch of mortgages, sure. You're going to get plenty of support right there real quick.
If a dude robbed my bank and destroyed my mortgage, I'd be like, yeah, man. I mean, as long as he didn't kill nobody and he's just like, hey, I'm taking all the money, but I'm also going to destroy your mortgage. I'd be like, this guy's the best. Money.
That sounds great. That's the best deal I've heard in weeks.
Here, I got a couple more bucks in my wallet, too. Here you go. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I can totally
Let me get this 10 out.
And I mean, this was Depression era.
Yes.
So, that's the thing. Like, everybody's down and out. So they're like, this guy just freed me of something I can't pay anyways. So I can definitely see why he kind of gained that, like, cult notoriety. So I have something. I guess he wasn't really revered like this, but
I guess I'm looking at a picture now.
What, you think he's pretty?
You think he's pretty?
No. But I mean,
he's got a baby face. You get what I'm saying? He looks like a baby. He's got a baby face.
I don't know what would like. I want to see some like comparison and contrast, like who other people would be called pretty boys in the 1920s.
So he received the nickname from a girlfriend in Kansas City, and apparently that's the one that stuck. You never get to pick your nickname, man. It's just the one that sticks, and apparently that's the one.
Okay, so she called him Pretty Boy. I guarantee all of his buddies started cracking on him, and that's how it stuck.
And that's and I'm sure that was not something he enjoyed, honestly.
Also, what kind of like back in that time? What kind of weird nicknames? Pretty Boy, was it Bugsy? Bugsy Malone? Bugsy, that's your nickname. Like, what kind of weird like? Nobody has a cool nickname back in those times.
There had to be somebody. I can't remember. I don't think of any like right off the top of my head though. Maybe I had cool nicknames.
Yeah, but it always seems like there's like a lot of like pretty boys or like, you know, something
like
basic, where
like his name would be like, this is Johnny Shoes Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Pick something like random thing is like he had shoes on one time. So we call him Shoesy.
Shoesy.
He always had shoes available.
It's so weird him. Shoesy. So I got one that's the opposite of Shoesy. His name was the Barefoot Bandit.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
And this is another, like, because I was going on this whole thing.
Keith, take notes. That is a great segue.
I'm going to hang up now.
So I was still going on that thing where like I was talking about gentleman bandits and people that were robbing people but were generally nonviolent, and so it was just kind of interesting stories. And Colton Harris Moore is one of those. He is the Barefoot Bandit, and he just got out of jail in 2016. We're not talking about a long time ago. We're talking about this guy was born in 91. His crimes were committed in the 2010s. Yes. So he was caught in the Bahamas in 2010. But before that, he was charged with the theft of hundreds of thousands of dollars in property, including several small aircraft, boats, multiple cars, all committed while still a teenager. So the Barefoot Bandit got his nickname because at one of his crimes, he left 39 chalk footprints and the word "see ya." And it literally says on this Despite the widely reported nickname, officials said that he more often wore shoes. Weird. Shoesy. So he had kind of a weird childhood. His parents were not that active. And literally his first trouble with the law came from stealing stuff at age 12. First conviction at age 12.
That's pretty bad.
Three more by the time he was 13. And apparently his mom said like he had just like checked out. Didn't care what teacher said to him. Did nothing. Just he was checked out. So then we get into him as like a older teenager doing the crazy stuff. So he's suspected of being responsible for approximately 100 thefts in Washington, Idaho, and Canada. Bicycles, automobiles, light aircraft, and speedboats.
Jeez.
He learned how to fly planes by reading aircraft manuals. by watching How to Fly a Small Airplane DVD, by playing flight simulator computer games. And he stole a Cessna. So like a very small one.
But he had the joystick from Staples. So it worked.
I just need everyone to know this. He crashed the Cessna.
Oh, okay.
So like your video games will not save you if you need to go fly a plane. He survived, but apparently he tried to land it multiple times and then he crashed it. So like he kept circling the airport and didn't do it. And according to local sheriffs, he would also slip into people's homes just to get in their hot tub or steal ice cream.
I've been there.
And so then he started ramping it up.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. What's wrong with this guy?
That's what I'm saying. No. Okay. So one time he stole somebody's credit card and he ordered bear mace and night vision goggles because he started living, like, I think when he was like 15, he left his parents' house and just went and lived in the woods.
I love to hate this guy.
Yeah. Like he just went and lived in the woods. And so he would steal stuff so that he could keep living in the woods. And at one point they found $100 and a note at a vet in Raymond, Washington. And it said, drove by, had some extra cash. Please use this money for the care of the animals. And he literally signed his name, Colton Harris Moore, a.k.a. the Barefoot Bandit. So then he started stealing bigger stuff. Cars, trucks, SUVs. He stole boats. He stole a bigger Cessna. And once again, he crashed the Cessna. So like he probably shouldn't steal the planes anymore. Like he seems to crash them most of the time.
Yeah.
And so he just kept stealing.
Unless that's his goal. I mean, yeah, but it doesn't sound like a good plan.
It's really hard to tell at this point, but he kept stealing things. But then they were starting to get like on him and the FBI put a bounty on him. So he fled to the Bahamas and he stole a powerboat like because just he's got to steal boats and stuff. And
I love how he chooses to steal the most like
yeah apparently exotic it's a 44 thing. Foot boat. So like this what? Is no like oh I stole a John boat.
No, he's stealing everything. He's like, I don't think I can drive that. I'm gonna steal it. Yeah.
I'm gonna see if I can drive that.
I played yacht simulator. Yeah. I'm ready to go.
I'm gonna try and drive it by driving it. So they caught him and he was convicted on many different counts of theft. You know, I think he served like 7-ish years. He did, however, get out on parole in 2016. And one of the funniest things I saw about this was once he got out, he got a job, I think, for his lawyer, and he was doing clerical work. But he started a GoFundMe for flight lessons.
Oh, my God.
And the parole officer shut it down. No, that it's is like, I wonder why best. They did that. It's like, dude, you've stolen so many planes and you crashed them all trying to escape. No, you can't learn to fly.
Flight/yacht lessons, please.
Yacht lessons. GoFundMe, please.
Hey, doesn't no shoes. Doesn't need any shoes. No,
but he does need a yacht / Cessna. No, but that was just
nice.
The whole story was just so ridiculous. And also, he began publishing a blog in 2015 that was taken down. And it was essentially his supporting Donald Trump blog, which is
it oh seems god, that so sounds out of, about on track.
So yeah, all right, now you just canceled it all out.
Just out of left field, but yeah, he basically he tried to get the money for flight school, and they're like, no, you still owe $130,000 in restitution to your victims. Like, no, you can't go to flight school, and so he's out there grinding, and you know, I have to wonder if he's out there thinking, I want to go steal a Cessna right now.
Hey, Colton, if you're listening to this podcast, give us a call on the PDS hotline.
Why? Are you going to give him a Cessna?
Maybe you already did. Maybe he's the voice.
He's the voice.
The voice. You guys will know about that next week.
Soon.
Sorry, that's more off-air stuff. Sorry. I keep forgetting.
No, you're good. All right. So what's the last thing you discovered this week? Key?
do you guys want a museum or a movie?
Which one is the killer sofa?
That's the movie.
It's the movie.
I want the movie. I want to know what it means.
Well, it's exactly what it means. Killer sofa. It is it's a 2019 movie out of New Zealand. Give me just a second here. Let me bring it up.
So for those that don't know, Keith is our movie correspondent. So that's why he's bringing us a in-studio movie review about The Killer. What's the name of the movie? Is it called The Killer Sofa? Is that the name of the movie?
It is called Killer Sofa. This is a comedy horror. A killer reclining chair becomes enchanted by a girl and starts committing crimes of passion. that is probably the least way to explain that. It is a sofa. It is possessed by a demon, and it is it's trying to. It's stalking a girl who it has some sort of weird spiritual tie to.
Is it a lazy boy?
I don't think it's a lazy boy. It is written and directed by a gentleman named Bernie Rao. He's out of New Zealand. I will say this is a bit of a shameless plug because he is the guest on this week's pop-up film cast as well.
Really? Nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So when I first saw the trailer for this, I posted it on our Twitter feed, and I was like, oh, this looks like something that came off of our show.
that's fair, honestly.
Yeah. And immediately, immediately started following us right after that. And then we had gone back and forth a bit on having him come on the show. I watched the movie myself, so I'm not just throwing out a thing there. It is a very unique movie. More so than anything else that I've watched recently. It's a very low budget horror film, but it is here's a better explanation. Francesca always attracted weirdos. When one of her stalkers is found dead, she looks for comfort from her best friend. Meanwhile, her best friend's name is Maxie. Meanwhile, Maxie's grandfather, Jack, a disgraced rabbi, comes across a reclining chair containing the book, which is a demon in Jewish folklore. The book inside. Jack and his voodoo sorceress partner try to find out where the recliner has been delivered while exploring Jack's newfound gift for communicating with the other world. Meanwhile, the reclining chair becomes enchanted by Francesca and starts committing crimes of passion.
I love that it's such a passionate chair.
Oh, yeah, there's at least one passionate moment.
Wait, are you saying
with
there's
it?
There's a love scene with a recliner?
I mean, it comes across that way, yes. In talking to Bernie, it's actually his. It's a sofa that he owned that he actually used as well. it's very unique in the way that it's used throughout the movie as well. It's got the buttons look like little eyes and stuff like that. This is not a big budget horror film like say It or Quiet Place or something, but this is one of those like just fun little watches. It's an hour and 20 minutes. It goes by very fast. It is available on Amazon Prime right now.
Really?
As well.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So you can check that out. It's a nice double feature with.
I am going to actually watch that. If I can get it, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it tomorrow probably.
Yeah. It is. Again, the guy, talked to him as well. He was a fun guest on our show. But it's ideas like Killer Sofa. Another movie out there that he didn't do called Velocipaster about a.
God.
About a priest who becomes a dinosaur. As priest becomes infected with something, he becomes a dinosaur and he avenges people. I tried watching part of that this morning, and I couldn't get very far into it. But
I would have to watch that whole movie just because of how good the title is to that movie.
Yeah, it's all these type of things that make me feel much better about the movies that we quote unquote watch over on. On the pop-up film cast,
that's fair.
Yeah. Makes the swamp. What was it?
The stink swamp? Water.
The stink water trilogy.
Kurt came up with a stink water trilogy, and that's no better.
No, it's way. It has a lot of credence. I think it's in the same ballpark. We just got to get it movie made.
It's definitely in the same ballpark.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's my that's a shameless plug for the show as well. But also, yeah, Killer Sofa as my other discovery of the week.
No, I am glad that you shared that discovery because I want to now go and watch the Killer Sofa. Oh man, yeah. That sounds different.
It sounds exactly like you think it does.
I mean, yeah, I am curious. I'll say that. So thanks for that discovery.
Keith, thank you so much for being on the show. Absolutely. We really appreciate your time. Thank you for bringing some amazing discoveries. And if you want to learn more about his show, like he was just talking about, it's the Pop-Up Filmcast, everywhere you can find podcasts. It's an amazing show. And we've been listening to it for a few years, and we've been on it a couple times, and it's always a fun listen.
Absolutely. Definitely check it out.
Now, Zach.
Looking forward to having both of you guys back on as well.
We're looking forward to being on there, hopefully. Zach, what you got for our last discovery?
The band of the week this week is called Flying Hot Saucers. They were originally from Colorado. They moved to St. Pete. It's like psychedelic rock. It has kind of an old, like a classic rock type of vibe. Really amazing vocalist, everything like that. They're really great people. I talked to them on the Creator's Cove, as I've been doing here. So if you want to hear my conversation with them, Creator's Cove, and you'll see it, Flying Hot Saucers. The song is called Don't Think. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
was a podcast from the Podfix Network. You can check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.